Let us start. The problem. The problem is computing eigenvalues. We know by the definitions of eigenvalues and eigenvectors that the eigenvalues are the zeros of the characteristic polynomial of a given matrix. So the approach that can be devised, thus taking into account the definition, is to compute in some way this polynomial or, as an alternative approach, getting able to compute the values of this polynomial in any point. So I can try to compute the coefficients. This is a heavy task. Or devise a method for computing the value of p for an epsilon for an assigned real value x. And after, I should apply a functional iteration method for computing each eigenvalue. This is not the usual way that is followed, and the main reason is this passage. The coefficients, in particular, it is well known that the coefficients of the characteristic polynomial may be often ill-conditioned with regard to the elements, the entries of the matrix. The matrix A. And any method for computing directly P in X using only the entry of A is reasonably recommendable only in the case that A is a sparse matrix, a matrix with a lot of zeros, and possibly structure, which means that the non-zero elements, the non-zero entries, are in prescribed location. The main cases, which will be the only cases which will be considered in this course, are three diagonal matrices, or more generally, Hessenberg matrices. You know how three diagonal matrices are made. Heisenberg matrices are a wider, constitute form a wider class of matrices defined in this way. Under the co-diagonal, that is the diagonal under the main diagonal, there are zero entries. So, it makes sense to pass through the characteristic polynomial substantially only in the case of sparse and scattered matrices, which are the alternatives. A general classification of this method can be made in this way. We start from the matrix A. And consider the so-called fully iterative methods which, as we will see, are methods, iterative methods, approximating one or more eigenvalues and eigenvectors of the matrix. Or reduce the matrix to a form of this kind. Sparse structured, that is substantially, as we told before, we consider this more general class, Heisenberg form. And after, apply in an iterative method to the Heisenberg form. Iterative. Possibility of using the characteristic polynomial is restricted to this class, so when we face an Heisenberg, a Heisenberg or three diagonal matrix, we can consider here methods dealing with for the first choice, we list the possible methods. For the first choice, we have a method whose name is, again, Jacobi, or Jacobi as the iterative method for linear systems. The power of the method. And the QR method. QR method. The name is due to the fact that the method uses the factorization QR. For the second choice, reduction to a simple form and then iterative method. The iterative method is essentially the QR method and its variants. For this special choice, reduction plus the use in some sense of the characteristic polynomial, there are specific and particularly efficient methods. The older method which uses the so-called Sturm sequences. And another possible approach is given by the so-called divide and conquer algorithm for the diagonal matrices. There are some limitations, some restrictions, some additive assumptions for most of this method. For instance, this method works only for real symmetric matrices. But let us say some information about those of this method which will be described and studied in today's and the lessons which will follow. We will see the power method, the QR method, and these two particular methods. In which order? We will start today with this, the power method. In the month of April, we will see these two. And as the last, we will see the QR method, which can be used in both these situations, since it is the most general kind of approach to a general problem of eigenvalues. Well, let me say something more about this reduction. How this reduction can be made? It must be a similarity, possibly unitary similarity reduction. Similarity since eigenvalues must be leave unchanged. Reduction of a generic, and here no assumption is made, matrix to Hessenberg forms. Uh, This reduction can be performed with natural choice by means of householder elementary transformation. How can this be done? We have a full square matrix. We consider here a householder, householder transformation with the letter, maybe let us call it B. Remind, the definition is the identity minus the coefficient beta and B pH. This matrix, you know, is Hermitian and unitary, and the constant beta and the vector v can be chosen in such a way that v multiplied by some vector gives a multiple of the first column of the identity matrix. Well, we pick v in such a way that v by a makes a new matrix, say A sub 1, with zeros from the third row up to the last row. This is different from the case of the householder transformation used in the QR factorization of the matrix. Why? Because in that case we put a zero also in the second row. We put zeros only in the rows from the third and so on up to the last row. Why? Because this is possible using a matrix V which contains the important part of the transformation in the rows and columns from the second to the last. Since we have to keep the eigenvalues, when we multiply the matrix A sub 1 on the right by the transpose conjugate of B, which is equal to B, we have here all the zeros and also V has, also this matrix has the same structure, it's the same matrix. When we perform this multiplication, the first row, the first column, does not change. That is, we obtain a matrix, let us call A sub 2, with the zeros in the first column in the same rows where they were in the previous matrix. If we go on using this idea with other suitable householder elementary transformation, after at most and minus 2 steps, we obtain a matrix which has the Hessenberg pattern. Here we have all zeros. And the matrix H, which has been obtained by using n minus 2 similarity unitary transformation, is similar to A, which is the advantage. We have about 1/2 of the entries equal to zero. So whichever method will be used from on H, some kind of sphere will be on the computational cost. This is clear. Moreover, the transformation is unitary, so we are guaranteed about stability. Well, in the particular case, when A is Hermitian, also H is Hermitian. So, if the given matrix was Hermitian, since the unitary transformations preserve the property of being Hermitian, unitary transformations, that is also there, implies H Hermitian, which means H tridiagonal. If a Hermitian, if a Hessenberg matrix is Hermitian, it must be three diagonal, so the advantage is doubled. Before describing the first method in the list, this is the power method, we promise a nice and simple result, which is in connection with the conditioning of the problem we are dealing with. The conditioning is a fundamental aspect of all numerical problems, especially in the linear case. Often it is very hard to obtain simple and useful results. This is not our case. There are many results, many theorems concerning with the conditioning of the problem of the eigenvalues of the square matrix. The problem can be seen this way. Each eigenvalue lambda, we pick one single eigenvalue, seen as a function of A. If you remember the conceptual meaning of conditioning of a problem, of a general computation problem, we have to think this scenario in this way. We suppose to vary data and to study the variation of the result. The conditioning of a problem is essentially related to this point of view. We perturb the data, change the data slightly, and we study how much the result, the value of the function, in this case an eigenvalue, changes on the as the effect of perturbing the data of the problem itself. So let us suppose that using the usual notation, lambda and x are the eigenvalue and eigenvector of a given matrix. And let us consider a modified matrix A plus delta A. Delta A is matrix, a square matrix of the same size. And now let us consider a generic eigenvalue, call it xi, of the perturbed matrix with eigenvector y. So this is the exact problem, as it is often called, and the second is the perturbed problem. Can be something we talked about the difference between the perturbed eigenvalue and the exact eigenvalue. The result which will be proven now is a simple result. States that if A is diagonalizable, if we use a vector norm with this property such that a matrix norm induced by some vector norm with this special property, which will be essential in proof of the statement, such that this vector norm, when applied to a diagonal matrix E, which diagonal matrix is a one, and so on, gives the maximum modulus of the diagonal entries. This is true for most of the commonly used matrix norm induced by some other vector norms, say the infinity, the one norm, the Euclidean norm, and so on. But there exist matrix norms which have not this problem. So we will need this property in the assumption, and if we, according to the assumption of the diagonalizability of A, call T, a matrix which diagonalizes A, so it is a matrix T which has as columns the eigenvectors of A. If we call with me of T the condition number, then the result is the following. There exists an eigenvalue, an exact eigenvalue lambda, such that C minus lambda, absolute value of the modulus, is less or equal than the condition number of T multiplied by the norm, the matrix norm which has been chosen, of the perturbation matrix delta A. This result is called as Bauer PK, there are German surnames, so the exact pronunciation should be PK. Bauer-PK theorem. The proof is quite immediate. Well, we start from the definition of Y and C. And expand the product of the matrix at the left-hand side of the equation. So we obtain delta A by Y equal to minus A by Y plus C times Y. Let us write this as minus A minus C by the identity by Y. Now, let us suppose that this matrix is invertible. If this matrix is not invertible, it can be possible, this would mean that C, would be eigenvalue of A. If this matrix is not invertible, is singular, this means that the determinant is zero. But this is just the definition of eigenvalue through the zeros of the characteristic polynomial. So this means that in the thesis, I could pick as lambda C itself, because C is among the eigenvalues of A. So this difference should be zero. Clearly, this inequality would be satisfied. So we consider all the case that this matrix is invertible, we consider the inverse and multiply both the sides of the equation by the inverse, obtaining a minus c by the length dt, the inverse delta, matrix delta, y. And on the left, on the right, on the right side I have only minus y. We apply the norm. Which norm? A vector norm introducing the considered matrix norm. I forgot to say that this property such that is called sometimes by the attribute absolute norm. Matrix norms having this property are called absolute norms. On the left, we use the compatibility property between vector and matrix norm. So we obtain that the norm of the inverse of this matrix by the norm of delta A by the norm of Y is greater or equal than the norm of Y. And so, because Y is a non-zero vector, it is an eigenvector, and we have the inverse by the norm of the perturbation is greater or equal than 1. Okay. We have not yet used the diagonalizing loop with ability and the assumption that the norm is an absolute norm. We use these two assumptions now in this way. Here we can diagonalize all A and the second matrix, putting as factors the matrix T and inverse of T, the diagonal matrix D minus JC by the identity matrix, the inverse in this order of T, this is also the inverse, norm, again, the properties, one of the properties of the matrix norm, this is the norm of the product, so it is less or equal than the product of the norms. You see the product of the norm of T and the norm of the inverse of T. This is the condition number of T. Okay, right. Here, the condition number of T with respect to this matrix norm. And then we have here the norm, an absolute norm of the diagonal matrix. This is diagonal. T is diagonal, is the matrix which, with the eigenvalues along the main diagonal, the identity also is obviously a diagonal. Here we have the matrix it is inverted. So we have a diagonal matrix having these numbers along the diagonal. Well, use this property, this assumption. So we have the maximum over I of the moduli of numbers of the form 1 over lambda sub I minus C. This one. By norm of delta A greater than 1. Last step. The maximum of over a set of positive ratios, fractions, is given by 1 over the minimum above the denominators. So the inequality can be written again in this form. The condition number 1 over the minimum But this minimum could be attained for some value of I. Say that this minimum is equal to lambda minus xi. Say that lambda is the a particular eigenvalue for which the minimum is reached, is attained. The conclusion is you multiply both sides of the inequality by this minimum, you have exactly what we wanted. There exists some lambda, they can be more than one, such that this difference in absolute value is not greater than the product of these two numbers. So there are other results, as I told you before, concerned with the condition of this problem, but they are much more complicated. This is an elementary result, which has nice applications, nice consequences. And the usefulness of results of this kind can be realized when we are able to state that for some matrices, the eigenvalue problem is well conditioned. So, question: are there, using this result, are there matrices for which the problem is well condition? Clearly, they are the matrices for which me is small. Me of t is a well-known y class of matrices for which this condition number with regard to the unknown is 1.
which matrix is the normal matrix
if A is normal. The normal matrices, the class of normal matrices includes, for example, a common example of emission and union. If A is normal, then by using Schur theorem, A can be diagonalized with a unitary matrix. That is, there are these T unitary, so we have T commission A T. Since T is unitary, the two norms of T and the two norms of T emission are both one, so the condition number, which is the product of these two norms, if we use the two norms, which is an absolute norm, the condition number attains its minimum. So this is the best possible case. So for emission in particular, and unitary matrices, if we are interested in their eigenvalues, easy in this sense, in the sense of well conditioning problems. A last comment before stopping. For a short interval. The last comment is also interesting in the applications of all methods. You know that in presence, in the unavoidable presence of rounding errors, the bounds on errors are given for relative errors. Instead, this result regards the absolute error. We have lambda minus c. Less than, I write it again, the condition number by. So if we consider the relative error, we must put here lambda and also here. So even if mi is small and this norm is small, let's say the two norm, if the modulus of lambda is small, if lambda is small eigenvalue, then the ratio can be large. The ratio will be surely large, and this, the error, the relative error, can be large. This means this consideration, this result regarding the relative error lies an easily detectable phenomenon. It is, small eigenvalues are harder to be approximated. Even for normal matrices, quindi anche per matrici simmetriche, even for Hermitian the eigenvalues with modulus, modulus are tied to the one approximately. For this simple reason, we have the one over the absolute value. If we face the relative error, we have comparable accuracy, possible accuracy problems. Okay, from MOCP, let us stop for 2 minutes. And in the second part of today's lesson, we will describe the power method.